person of the IAC, Judge Makanya. You remember that he's also one of the commissioners that were actually appointed the other day, or recommended the other day. And then also Commissioner Talia, but I don't see her here. She's still coming. Also one of the new commissioners, I think we appointed the other day. So then we have also with us Mr. Masoto Mwepia, the Chief Electoral Officer, and Mr. Mamabolo, the Acting Deputy Chief Electoral Officer, Ms. Esther DeWet, and Mr. Stephen Langtry, and we welcome all of you, and we give over to you to do your presentation, and then we will ask the necessary questions. Thank you very much. I don't know who's going to take the lead, but there we are. Please go ahead. Thank you very much.
Okay,
we also wanted to announce ourselves so that you don't say who are these people.
Okay, no, fine. We will allow that. Please go ahead.
Okay. I'm Vusi Nhlapo, the special advisor to the Minister of Home Affairs, and next to me is the PLO for the Minister of Home Affairs, Mr. Mantlane.
Thank you very much. I think maybe some of the commissioners and other staff, the IEC, do not necessarily know all the members on this side. So, Mr. De Freitas, Honorable De Freitas, maybe we can just start with you, and then if all of you can just introduce yourselves quickly. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Manny De Freitas, member of the Home Affairs Portfolio Committee.
Good morning. Masizole Masela is my name.
Good morning, my name is Kiki Khwekwa, I'm a member of the portfolio.
Good morning, I'm Pocha Sebone, a member of the portfolio committee.
Good morning, I'm Adam Salmon, I do research for the committee.
Morning, Eddie Matonsi for me to second.
Thank you very much. Over to the IEC.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Terence Lan, I'm the Deputy Chairperson of the Electoral Commission. And I would like to firstly apologize for the Chairperson, who is also not able to make it. She is attending to other important issues and matters in Gambia. But she sent her apologies. She would have loved to be here, but unfortunately it was not possible for her to be here. And I also want to express my appreciation for our appearance here. And honourable members, we as the Electoral Commission, we always pride ourselves about the fact that we have created a pool of electoral expertise, and that electoral expertise helps to sustain the organisation. And I'm therefore going to start introducing members who are accompanying us today. Next to me, as the acting chairperson indicated, is Judge Makanya, member of the Electoral Commission. And we're expecting Commissioner Talzart, who I think is very familiar to most of you. And after Judge Makanya is Stephen Langtry. Stephen Langtry is a manager in the CEO's office. And next to Mr. Langtry is our brand new Chief Electoral Officer, Mr. Masoto Mwepia. You know, when I indicated in my introduction that we've got a pool of electoral expertise, I was mainly referring to people like him, because he used to be our Deputy Chief Electoral Officer, and it was not difficult for us to appoint him to take over when Advocate Lakula became the chairperson. So just next to him again, we've got another person also who does not really need much introduction. He has run Gauteng as the provincial electoral officer for Gauteng, and he's also part of the expertise that we have developed as an organization, and now he is acting as the deputy CEO electoral matters for electoral operations. So he's taken over temporarily in acting capacity Mr. Mwepe's position. And next to Mr. Simon Mabolo, who I've just introduced, is also someone who is very who's been with the IEC for a long, long time. She used to be responsible for the finances of Gauteng, and we recruited her at the national level. Now she's based at the national level as the manager responsible for budget. So this is the team that is going to be making a presentation. And as I've indicated, it's really a great honor for us to appear before you. And the presentation that is going to be made today is going to be made by Chief Electoral Officer, supported by the team that I have introduced, and will deal with the questions thereafter. As is normally the tradition, and I've learned this from the previous chairperson, Dr. Pam, that the difficult questions are always reserved for them. So we'll continue with that tradition, and then the commissioners will deal with easier questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. I must join the Chairperson of the Deputy Chairperson of the Electoral Commission in thanking you for this opportunity. We have 36 slides that we will go through. Some we might emphasize a little more than others. Thank you, Commissioner Talia, for joining us. We just started. The first slide is really a slide that does not need an introduction. I'll go to the first slide. Yeah. The vision and mission of the Commission. I'd like to point out, as the deputy chairperson would probably talk about that in more detail if required. This has been our vision until very recently. The Commission has looked at what it would like to accomplish within its term, and that vision will certainly change. There is a new vision that the Commission has put through. It's exciting, and we look forward to it. However, for this period, for the annual performance plan, the plan was based on this vision, and therefore we will deal with this vision and its mission. We then go to the organizational values. We have clearly indicated that the Commission really desires to serve its stakeholders, and this includes the electorate, the political parties, the media, permanent and temporary staff, and the organization subscribes to a number of organizational values, first of which is following best practices. And we do so, or we strive to do so, by stopping all forms of waste, driving for results and success, and planning and working in a way that would maximize the use of all of our inputs in the Commission. Secondly, we do so by being sensitive to race, culture, language, religion, disability, and gender issues. In this process, we take note of diversity in the experience and ability of our staff. We try to care and show respect to one another and to others. We also do our business in a way that would promote being ethical, honest, and truthful. And this we strive to do by communicating in an open and honest way, carrying out our work independently and impartially. I must say that we also do so transparently, acting with integrity and opposing corruption, and promoting the image and credibility of the Electoral Commission. The fourth value is improving continuously. The deputy chairperson indicated that one of the key things we do is to try and develop talent and to ensure that we have a pool big enough to ensure that we continuously improve. And we do so by maximizing training opportunities and development for staff. We support and inspire each other. We foster collaboration between teams and team members. And we really put goals that we seek to attain, all of us. In terms of our legislative and other mandates, this we have also articulated a few times, but I think I will go through again very, very briefly. Our mandate is taken from Section 190 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, and that in terms of that section, we are required to manage elections of national, provincial, and municipal legislative bodies in accordance with national legislation. We are also required to ensure that those elections are free and fair and declare their results within a period that is prescribed in the national legislation, a period which is as short as reasonably possible. The duties and functions of the Commission are defined in Section 5 of the Electoral Commission Act, and we list them. Members are very familiar with this. They have not changed, and I will therefore not go into the details of those, if members permit. In terms of the strategic plan, this is an important explanatory slide in that it shares with members the process that we follow in the development of our strategic plan. And the plan that we are sharing with you today was drafted in terms of the framework for strategic plans and annual performance plans as defined by National Treasury. It was developed after a consultative period in the organization. It was adopted formally and it was presented to the Commission and formally adopted by them. It covers a period of 5 years. It includes an annual performance plan for, as we speak, for we are speaking of that plan for this year. It includes the strategic goals, measurable objectives, the performance indicators, and the targets of the Commission's programs. It also includes budgets in respect of the strategic goals, quantified per strategic goal and for the period that we are covering. And this plan will form the basis of our annual report. When we report on the, we give an annual report at the end of this financial year, it would have been based on this plan that we are going to be sharing. We will establish procedures in the institution, or we have established procedures for reporting quarterly to the executive authority, the Commission, to facilitate effective performance monitoring, evaluation, correction, and indeed the oversight that the Commission does need to facilitate between itself and the portfolio committee. In terms of the strategic goals, we have five of them, and they are: one, to promote principles of peaceful, free, and fair elections. Secondly, to continuously seek opportunities to improve organizational efficiency and effectiveness, and to manage free and fair elections as the third one; to strengthen electoral democracy through education for public participation is the fourth one; and to support the core business of the Electoral Commission, that of managing free and fair elections and informing communities. In terms of the strategic goal number one, promoting principles for free and fair elections, we have two strategic objectives. The first one is to promote the knowledge of and adherence to democratic electoral principles nationally. And secondly, to position the Electoral Commission as a continuously improving organization through ongoing interaction and liaison with relevant stakeholders. In terms of how we have set our performance indicators and targets, for this strategic goal. You will notice that for the first goal, that of promoting knowledge of and adherence to democratic electoral principles, we have set the number of meetings with relevant stakeholders at a target of 25 for this annual period. And we will do so by reviewing them quarterly, and the quarterly spread is given there in the first quarter, 6 of them, in the second quarter, 7, the third quarter, 7, and the fourth quarter, 5. In terms of that goal, second goal, the number of interactions with relevant stakeholders will be quarterly as well, and we have set our target at 12, and the breakdown is also provided in terms of the first quarter to the fourth quarter for your attention. In terms of strategic goal number two, that of improving organizational efficiency and effectiveness, we have three strategic objectives. The first one is to ensure the implementation of the Electoral Commission's strategic goals and objectives aligned with the corresponding budget allocation. The second one is undertaking effective assurance and value-adding oversight. And the third one, ensuring compliance with all legal obligations and the management of risks emanating or anticipated in respect of all of our programs. And in terms of the performance indicators and targets that we have set there, for the first one, the number of quarterly reports that we'll submit is a key indicator for us. And there we will submit a report every quarter, and we will have four of them. The second one, in terms of the number of reports, that annual report that we'll have in place, we will have only one annual report, and that annual report will be done once our financial statements have been finalized and audited and submitted to yourselves. In terms of the number of risk-based annual internal audit plans, we will have one risk-based annual plan, obviously, and that we will have completed and in the fourth quarter of the year. The number of progress reports submitted to the audit committee, we have set ourselves a target to meet with the audit committee quarterly, and at each one of those quarterly meetings, we will have a report that we submit, which will form part of the indicators for this financial period. In terms of the performance indicator for strategic objective 2.3, we need to indicate to members that you will remember that one of our challenges in the past has been the niggling issues of compliance particularly with changes that came from Treasury or legislative changes that we had to deal with, particularly from Treasury. And we have set ourselves to have an area of our work that will look at monitoring all of our legal compliances. And we have set ourselves to have that in place by the end of this financial period. And we need to implement and maintain that framework during the remaining 2 years of this MTF period. And we'll do so quarterly. In the period, we need to have that embedded process in place. We, like I've indicated, we are establishing it, and we need to ensure that it functions as it should function. By the end of June, we want to have its functioning or its processes approved. By the end of September, we want to have trained people within the organization. By the end of December, we want to have material that we will then let everyone in the organization use, and then we will implement in the fourth quarter. The strategic objective 2.3, the second thing that we need to do there is the quarterly review and update of the organization's strategic register. This is linked to the one that I've just discussed before. But this is now the register, the risk register, the strategic risk register, that we will review quarterly in the same way that we will work with the audit committee. In terms of strategic goal number three, we are managing free and fair elections. There are a number of objectives that we need to satisfy there. We need to facilitate voter participation. We need to undertake the administration necessary for the functioning of political parties. We need to administer elections of representatives, which are statutory. We need to define, specify, and procure election materials and equipment for all electoral events. And I think it's important to say, you know, why we say this, because a lot of our expenditure, our budget, particularly in electoral periods of general elections, go into this area and have the effect of really testing the compliances that we put into place, and it becomes an important part to monitor on its own. We also need to establish infrastructure and personnel to meet our operational demands for every electoral event that we run in this institution. In terms of the performance indicators, we will frequently, we'll look at the frequency that the voter's roll is checked against the National Population Register for an up-to-date and accurate voter's roll. It is important to say that the number of checks and refreshes that we do on the population register really help to keep our voter's roll current. We put all of those new people that have registered in the interim since the last check, but we also remove people who may be deceased since the last check. The annual target is 12, which means it's once a month. But I must indicate that when we have by-elections, and sometimes when we have more than one set of by-elections in 1 month, we will do a refresh for each one of them. Even if we had refreshed it last week and we have another by-election coming next week, we will refresh it. So 12 is the minimum. We will genuinely do much more than that. And like I've indicated, it's three every quarter because there is at least one that we do every month. And I do not anticipate, or we do not anticipate that at the rate at which things are going, there is a month in which we will not have by-elections. But even so, we will still refresh. We refresh nevertheless. Secondly, the number of meetings with members of the party liaison committees, which we call PLCs, at national level, at provincial level, and at municipal level, it's a very good indicator in this area of the work. And you will see there that we are planning to have 10 of the party liaison committee meetings at national level, 54 at provincial level, and 1,170 at municipal level. The figure, chairperson, of 1, 2, 3, 4 sounds very basic. It's like we've put it in there, but it clearly is the 10, the 54, and the 1,170. And that, in essence, means that in every municipality, at provincial level, we will have 6 of these meetings in this period for every provincial office. And there are 9 of them, that's why we have 54. We will have 5 of these meetings per office at local level, and we have 234 offices. That's how we come to 1,170. And they are spread accordingly in terms of the quarterly spread. The other area we look at is the funding of political parties. And there we look at the number of disbursements that we make in terms of the law. We disburse our funds 4 times a year, once every quarter. And I think our latest disbursement was done yesterday, or it's today. Sure. And that's what we do, and we do that every quarter. In terms of performance indicators, going further, 3.3.1 there for supporting strategic goal 3.3 is the percentage of elections which for which the voter's roll is certified in accordance with election. And we are saying there that we should never have an election, a by-election or a general election, where the voter's roll has never been certified or, you know, updated and certified. This is for us very important because, you know, there are many countries that have elections, and you hear that their voter's roll was last updated 7 years ago. That, we are saying to ourselves, will never be the case, even for a by-election in this country. We will always refresh it and certify it before every electoral event. We're also talking about the number of calendar days in which elections are conducted from date of vacancy. This is very clear from our law. When we have vacancies, we have to fill them in 90 days for our ward councillors, and that's what we set ourselves to do. That's why every month we have by-elections, and sometimes in some months we have more than one set, because we have to meet this imperative. The next one is the number of calendar days in which we have to replace a proportional representative seat vacancies. And these are the ones where, you know, in terms of the function that we have of maintaining lists at municipal level, we have to fill those vacancies within 35 days. And we always do so, and that's what we set ourselves to achieve. When we report in our annual report, these figures have more significance in that it becomes very clear how many seats we have replaced or vacancies we have filled, PR seats, and how many ward seats we have also filled. And looking at when the vacancy arose and when that vacancy was filled, and therefore compliance is very easy in that respect. We also look at the time period in calendar days in which election results are announced by the Electoral Commission. The Electoral Commission is required to announce results in a period of no more than 7 days, or within 7 days, the law says. And you will notice that for by-elections, the Commission announces the very night that by-elections were held. We published them on our website that same night, literally a few hours after the elections were held. For general elections, in the last general election, the election results were published within 56 hours. And so that's really what we do. The proportion of registered voters who vote, you will see there, and it, you know, we did not want to take that away because this plan takes into account the MTF period. It's more than just this year. We say that we do this annually, but we say not applicable, not applicable, not applicable. The reason for that is that the meaningful measure applies in periods of general elections, and this plan does cover periods of general elections. For the purposes of this meeting, Chairperson, we could have taken it out, but then you would not see it for that period. That, you know, if you read our strategic plan in total, you would not have seen, you'd have wondered why we have skipped it. So we just put it there for you to note. On slide number 20, we are looking at performance indicators for strategic objective 3.4, and 3.4, you would remember, deals with defining, specifying, and procuring election material and equipment for all electoral events. There, it is important that we define everything that we would need for that election in advance, and then set out specifications, go on tender properly, and meet our obligations in terms of the PFMA. And that is for us a very key indicator. We do not want to have a situation where we discover right at the end that there are certain items of electoral materials that we have not thought about, and therefore we cannot go through procurement as we need to. So it is an important indicator, and we account for it within the organization. The second one is that we source materials in terms of the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act and Treasury regulations. And there we know that it is tight, but we have to comply. You know, we can't say we want to comply 98%. We have to set our compliance altogether at 100%, and that's what we have set ourselves to achieve. The the last one, it relates to the strategic objective of establishing infrastructure and personnel to meet operational demands for each electoral event. And there we look at the number of voting stations that are resourced, that are secured, and that are functional. Again, you will see it says quarterly, but it says not applicable. It, in terms of periods where we run by-elections, we don't, it would show a picture that does not give the entire meaning, but in a period of a general election, you can clearly see that we strive to work at 65% of schools and so on and so forth, and that's really what we try to do. Secondly, the number of schools used as voting stations, I've just spoken about that, we will show in a period that has an election. The third one is the number of facilities, warehousing facilities, storage and distribution facilities that we have to support our electoral events. The figures are given quarterly. 10 is the number of warehouses in terms of the annual target. 234 is the number of storage facilities at municipal level, because we have 234 facilities at that level. And one is the full-time distribution service provider that we have to facilitate this. That figure does not change, because we must always have these facilities and to be ready to discharge our obligations at any time, whether it be by-elections or general elections. That we always keep and must always be in place. In terms of strategic goal number four, that of strengthening electoral democracy through education for public participation, we have three strategic objectives. The first one is to educate the public on democracy and electoral processes. The second one is to position the Electoral Commission as a knowledge and research-driven organization on electoral democracy. And thirdly, to communicate electoral processes to the public. This strategic goal is one of the very difficult ones. And this committee has in the past even assisted, you know, by ensuring that we get an additional budget to undertake some of the work for the 3 years, in this period. And we are very grateful for that. But if we look at the performance indicators, the first one, obviously, to support the education to public, in terms of public democracy and in terms of the public on democracy and electoral processes, we need to look at the number of voter education events. And in this instance, we define events as those planned initiatives in the form of meetings or engagements that we have with the public. And we are looking at them at, for this period has been 992. I need to just give you a basic background to this. Four of those are national events, 36 of them are provincial events, and which means, there's four per province for the nine provinces. And 952 of these are going to be in municipalities. We are expecting to have four of this per municipality in this financial period, and that really gives you the breakdown that we have there. In terms of the strategic objective of positioning the Electoral Commission as a knowledge and research-driven organization, we are looking at the number of projects that we have with strategic partners, and again looking at them quarterly. We are looking at 50 of those events in this year, and they are spread accordingly in terms of the quarterly periods. And thirdly, in terms of the communicating electoral processes to the public, we are looking at the quantity of educational materials disseminated. There we are looking at materials reaching households, not individuals. And we are looking at 2 million households being reached with that material. We're looking at research projects conducted as well. And there we are talking for this period of three research initiatives, and those will be in the third quarter and the fourth quarter. And we're looking at designing and implementing knowledge management systems. This is an area where, in the past, we have managed to get by with a lot of challenge within the organization, and we did say I think at this time last year that it would be an area that we would want to focus on. We are very pleased to indicate that we are now looking at having that system implemented by the end of this financial period, and it is being developed at the moment. The design is currently underway, and we think that by the time we get to elections in 2014, this will be an area that is running very smoothly. When we talk about the relationship and interaction that we have with the media, we also look at that in terms of what engagement, what form of engagement that will take. And this mainly will be media releases. There'll be media interviews and there'll be media analysis reports. And we give the breakdown of those processes that we said. In the nature of the plans, these are figures that we cannot be get below. But sometimes when events happen, these numbers may increase, and that's really the whole approach that we deal with when we deal with this area of the work. The number of external publications that we're looking at, we're not only looking at the research that we have undertaken and published, that I've already spoken about, but we're also talking about the annual report and any other area of publication. Publications are the area of publication is one of the challenges that we've had in the past. And the new commission is putting a lot of emphasis in this area of the work. And when we talk about our plans in the future, you may find that this is an area that will definitely be changing amongst others. The number of targeted communication platforms, we are looking at radio and electronic media, which are increasing very fast. One of the key development areas in communication is the social media arena, and our presence in that area has been very small. We started in the last elections, but that's the area of the greatest growth for us, and that's what we are seeking to do at the moment. The last strategic goal deals with supporting the core business of the Electoral Commission, and we have 8 strategic objectives there. Looking at a developed human resources strategy and plan, developing, adopting, and implementing and maintaining a human resources training and skills development plan is the second one, providing an integrated support service, third one. The fourth one, having the timely funding of projects aligned with our strategy. The fifth one, complying with financial legislation, policies and procedures. I've spoken about this. The sixth one, fairly presented financial statements. And the seventh one, developing an information and communications technology strategy with policies and procedures that we can maintain, which will keep our information communication technology environment very stable. We depend on this, and for us, ICT has to be stable, and it's an important part of the work we do, even for accuracy and integrity. And the last one is maintaining a proactive and responsive legal framework for the Electoral Commission. In terms of this, the first one of human resources strategy and plan, we are looking at the date by which comprehensive human resources strategy and plan is approved, and its compliance is percentage compliance is certified. One would say, do you not have it in place? We have, but as we go through every annual performance plan, there are things that will be emphasized more, and those are the things that we are dealing with. and we are indicating how we will deal with it in this annual period. The second one is the annual review of the strategy and plan, and that we will finalize and approve by the 31st of March for the electoral period that will be coming in 2014. In terms of developing, adopting, and implementing and maintaining the human resources training and skills development plan, the things we are looking at is that it's an integrated training strategy and plan, which we hope for purposes of particularly of purposes of elections, we in 2014 will have completed by the end of March, which is this financial period. And there you will see that we will have 1,920 trained electoral staff officials. This, in this period, deals or talks to, on average, 80 by-elections, 80 wards having by-elections, and on average, 320 VDs, voting districts, in which this 80 by-elections will be taking place. And for those, we need 6 staff members. Those numbers will give you 1,920. And so quarterly, we have spread this number evenly, but as you know, this is not a figure that we can predict. It does fluctuate a little bit. In some periods, it's more than in others. I need to indicate that in recent times, we have seen an increase in the number of by-elections we've had in December and January. In the past, we've not had in both periods. And sometimes we've not had for both December and January, but in the last financial period, we've seen in both periods, and so that number is increasing. And I think that we will, in this period, be doing more than 1,920 if we proceed at the rate at which we are proceeding at the moment. The number of staff that we are hoping to train in the IEC is 450, and we are giving that background as well. On the next page, we are dealing with the first strategic objective, that of providing integrated support services. And in this respect, really, this is developing a support plan, a support services strategy and plan, and how we will comply with it. One of the key challenges that we've had, it's at our local offices level, where we've had lots of movements because municipalities, where we had our offices in those municipalities, have approached us and said, we are growing as municipalities, we are running out of accommodation, and we need you to find accommodation outside of the municipal precinct. And there, a lot of the guidelines we need to put in place for our offices to establish outside of the municipal offices becomes very, very important. And that's an area that we deal with greatly at the moment. The annual review of the strategic plan, this functions greatly in 2013-2014, which is a period that's following. It's similar to the ones I've said before, that where we say not applicable, we are referring to periods other than general election periods. On the next page, we deal with the timely funding of projects aligned with the strategy, and in that respect, we would like to meet statutory deadlines in respect of budgeting. That, of course, in the Commission we do quarterly. We provide our feedback to members of the Commission quarterly, and we comply with the deadlines as set by National Treasury in terms of those quotas. I think it is important that I indicate that in the second quarter, we need to develop our MTF processes for the ensuing period. And in addition, we do our quarterly reporting of where we are. In the third quarter, we do our estimates for national expenditure as required by Treasury, and as well as our quarterly review. And in the fourth quarter, we do our quarterly review and you know, deal with issues of financial statements. One of the key improvement areas is 5.4.2, where we are looking at management accounts. In the past, we have looked at these management accounts periodically, but not regularly in terms of the periods that we now have, 12. This means that we are looking at our management accounts literally every month. And this is one area that we think a great deal of improvement is being made internally in the organization. In terms of the strategic objective dealing with complying with financial legislation, policies, and procedures, there we will review financial policies and procedures, including delegation of authority annually. And you know, by the 30th of September, we shall have reviewed and undertaken awareness training. You know, by the end of the financial period, that awareness training would be completed. But we'll also prepare monthly compliance reports. These are reports that will indicate to us if there are deviations to our plans, if there are any risks that we are picking up and how we should deal with them, and therefore it will inform every one of our quarterly review processes where corrective action will be taken. With respect to fairly presenting our financial statements, there truly we need to set ourselves to achieve an unqualified audit report each year. This is not something we take for granted, and we know it has to be earned, and so we will work on it. It happens in the second quarter, and there are a number of changes in the financial environment, and we need to keep up to date with them and manage to the best of our abilities. And we are vigilantly going to try all the time to ensure that we attain that unqualified audit. In terms of developing an ICT strategy, policy, and procedure, and maintaining a stable ICT environment, we have, in this period, we are planning a five-year ICT strategy plan. We have put into place an advisory body of experts, not necessarily within the commission, to advise, as it were, us in terms of the plan that we are putting in place. We have always done well, but this is it's an area of technology that has a lot of challenges, a lot of changes, and we think we will do better to ensure that as we review the 5 years coming, we do have experts on hand also to assist us. And this is really an advisory committee. It's not people coming to us all the time. And we will conclude that and finalize that plan by the end of this annual period. When we look at keeping the network stable, there we are looking at the systems being up, the uptime of the systems being 97% at least. You hear that banks run at between 92% and 95%. We are targeting 97%. You know, and that's something we think we should always strive to do. 100% will come as a bonus, and that's what we like. But we will do better than banks. That's what we are saying as well. And in terms of the last one, that of maintaining a proactive and responsive legal framework for the Electoral Commission, we will do an annual legal review report. And we'll submit it to the Commission, and we share this with political parties. And for this period, we will consult with our stakeholders, particularly political parties, extensively in the third quarter, and we'll finalize and approve the report in the fourth quarter. Chairperson, I now deal with the aspect that really summarizes this presentation in terms of rents and cents. this slide, I'm going to spend a little more time on it. I've made a number of notes that I need to just bring to your attention. We have, for in line with the MTF period, presented our budget there. You will clearly see that for the financial period 2012-2013, against every one of those strategic objectives, what is the amount that we have allocated? And for that period, for this period, we are looking at a budget of approximately 771 million. It's 770,941,000. That's what we have for this financial period. I must indicate that when one looks at the arrangement, you will clearly see that because this is not a year in which we have general registration or a general election, the budget is low. But as we prepare for the 2014 national and provincial elections, we will have, in the period 2013-2014, a budget of 1.4 billion, almost double what we have in this year. And that's primarily because we will have voter registration period for that general election falling into that financial period. We are looking at two voter registration weekends where we will open all of our stations countrywide, approximately at least 21,000 of them. We will employ staff that will register people on both occasions, and therefore we'll have to pay for the venues that we will be using. That explains that budget. The budget increases slightly more in 2014-2015 because that is the period in which the 2014 elections will take place. Registration will fall in the year before, and the year thereafter will be the elections. Our budget, in terms of the of this period, will be 3.8 billion. I've added year one, year two, and year three. They give you 3.8 billion. I am now going to talk to that slide in terms of the strategic goals and the amounts that we allocate to give you an idea how those amounts are going to be spent. For the strategic goal number one, you will note that we have an amount for the three periods. That amount, the total there will be 13.7 million. I did not include that in the column for totals, but I'll provide it to you. It's 13.7 million, and that amount really deals with major elements of the program for promoting principles of peaceful, free, and fair elections, which really relate to our staff either hosting member electoral management bodies that come to us as we speak to you. We have lots of delegations that come to us. It's a good thing. We share and exchange views and get to know what practices others apply, improve the way we do the work that we do, and so on and so forth. As I speak to you, we are hosting an electoral commission of Angola. They are with us this week, that's the kind of work we do. But we also spend and are requested, particularly through foreign affairs, international relations, we get to be requested to assist other countries. We just have a delegation of 10 people coming back this week from South Korea. We've had a delegation going to Guinea-Bissau before the current events, and so on and so forth. It happens regularly. I need to point out that amount will always be higher in periods when we don't have general elections, because then in those periods, we do host others and we do go out, but on a very limited basis. We say charity begins at home. That's when we do a lot of that work at home. But in a period like now, there are many of those that come to us, and we do find time to release our staff. It's a very important skilling aspect for our own staff. They get to reflect on the work they do when they are not under pressure themselves to do it, when they are helping others or they are learning from others to do it. And we value that aspect. In fact, the commission says we're not aggressive enough. Perhaps we should be more aggressive and seek more opportunities in a period like this. But, of course, the budget also dictates. That's what we deal with then. In the second strategic goal of improving organizational efficiency and effectiveness, you will note that the total amount for the three periods is 36.2 million. And there, a key initiative in this area entails, you know, the whole area of strengthening risk management, which I spoke about earlier, assessing our own organizational readiness to conduct elections. Remember, we will be going through, in 2013, 2014, we'll be going through two registration weekends, and in 2014, 2015, we'll be going through an election. And those assessment of organizational readiness sessions are key in our own organization. But also we debrief after all of those events with political parties in the main, and that also is provided for there. We'll also include the review of a number of policies and procedures, because as we improve certain things, there is a need to then look at the policies that we need to bring in and support that area of the work. Clearly, that is fairly constant in this period. There's a lot of work that we're already doing. We have a schedule of legislative review that we are working on, that we deal with political parties and our other stakeholders, but that amount is basically constant throughout the period. The third strategic goal of managing free and fair elections clearly is directly linked to electoral activity, and you will see that in this period, in fact for the entire period, 3-year period, it's 1.1 billion, the total for that. And there we are talking of electoral goods and services that we need to procure for about a billion, and the further 97 million is allocated to approximately 5,000 staff members who we bring when we have high activity period to deal with issues primarily of logistical organization across our 234 municipal offices. Costs obviously will be very high in, they are at their lowest in 2012, 2013, and will be at their highest when that election is held. The fourth strategic goal really looks at the when we look at strengthening electoral democracy through education for public participation. I have indicated that this is an area also that the Commission is going to be looking at. For this period, it carries a budget of 449 million for the three financial periods. It's 449 million in total. And it's directed at informing and educating civil society on democracy and electoral processes. Major changes may be expected as the Commission reviews how this program will be designed and implemented in preparation for the 2014 elections. And when we come to you, possibly this time next year, we may be talking about a number of changes. To the extent that it's possible to reallocate within programs, we'll possibly be talking to the committee in that respect. But for now, this is what it is. Commissioner Tilani, I trust I've said something that you were going to say.
thank you very much. SCU, I think you've really been able to cover most of the crucial aspects. We indicated that we've got a very brand new commissioner who arrived during the process of a presentation, Commissioner Tazarel. We welcome you again. And I also forgot to apologize for Commissioner Finlay earlier on. He's unfortunately also busy with elections in the Eastern Cape. So as soon as he is available, he was also very, very keen to come here because he has not appeared before the committee. So I think to a large extent the members of the honorable members now are familiar with all the people that they have appointed. You obviously in the past only knew maybe the names, but now you can put the faces to those names. And Chairperson, if I could also just take liberty of even to re-emphasize certain things that the CEO raised. He indicated that we as the Commission have been looking at how we can reorganize our activities in order to be able to fit with the new challenges, new activities. We term that Vision 2018 basically to coincide with our period of being commissioners for this organization. Now, I'm not going to be talking about those issues, but I just want to isolate a few aspects that I think could be crucial so that by the time we come to you, you are at least familiar with those. The legislative mandate does not change. It remains the same. Everything that we have taken consideration, we have taken consideration the work that we've been doing in the country. We also looked at the work that has been happening elsewhere in the continent and in the world. As you may be aware that we have been participating a lot in the continent. We influence the developments in the continent, but we also get influenced. We learn new things as we engage with the continent on their processes. So all these issues we have taken in consideration in developing this new vision. And the new vision essentially emphasizes the issue of leadership and preeminence of electoral commission within the context of electoral democracy or as an election management body. So you'll begin to see some of those aspects beginning to find some kind of a pronouncement within the vision that we're going to be presenting to you at a later stage. But we also try to refine the activities in order to ensure maximum impact of our programs and processes. We look at the staffing, we look at our programs, we look at our systems, and try to refine things slightly in order for us to be able to take these issues that I suggested to honorable members we have learned during the process of our experience and try to see how those kind of issues can be reorganized. We identify the weaknesses and hindrances and try to deal with those as well. But also we reconfirm our mandate or our core mandate as the Electoral Commission. We give priority also for activities that we normally refer to as non-election period. So, you know, you'll begin to realize, especially when the CEO was talking about on the budget, I think it is item four, issue of active citizenry. We're beginning to emphasize those kind of issues, begin to develop some programs that deal with those kind of issues, and try to make sure that the Electoral Commission has got even a much more higher profile during those periods when we are not having the elections. We align all these activities with our core mandate. We also look at the issue of innovation. What are the kind of the things that we need to deal with in order to be able to improve our systems? You know, we beginning to explore issues of electronic voting. We're trying to see what it means in practical terms and if at all it is required. But also we try to look at whatever mechanisms and innovations that are already there within the organization on how we can improve on all those aspects. And then lastly, we look at issues of how we can systematize our engagement with the continent and also look at the values, programs, and projects. We also try to see, as an organization, how can we begin to improve on our governance processes and issues so that at a later stage it does not become a problem for the organization. So It is basically about improvement, it's about innovation, it's about trying to look at the new emphasis within the current legislative framework that we that has been developed for us in terms of the Constitution and the Electoral Act and all other pieces of legislation that govern our activities. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. We thank the Vice Chairperson as well as the CEO for their contributions, and now it's we also welcome from the member side our former colleague, Commissioner Boyer. And now it's over to the honourable members to ask questions. I will start with the honourable De Freitas, then honourable McIntosh. Any other hands? Honourable Bothman, honourable Nkasela, and then in that order. Last, honourable Khasi Bonwe and honourable Ray Khanna. Yes, honourable McIntosh. Ah, yeah, I think the Freitas first. So.
Thank you, Chair. Before I ask some questions, if you'll be your indulgence, Chair, I just want to say that I think we, as South Africans, and possibly even politicians in particular, have taken the IEC for granted. My experience is beyond sort of most people. I've had the privilege of dealing with the IEC in various capacities, and they've always been exactly that, independent. They refuse to be bullied by any party, irrespective of who the party is. They've completely professional. You hear nothing. It's almost boring with the IEC. You hear no scandals, which is the way it should be. There are no scandals about the board. There are no issues. They're completely professional. I'm talking about all the full-time staff people that I've dealt with from high up right to on the provincial and other levels. So I think we need to acknowledge that and thank them for the fantastic work they're doing. It doesn't mean that there are problems, and certainly there are some questions that I have, but I think we're very, as the IEC, very respected internationally. Through the rest of our continent, it's an organization that's looked at and admired. And I think we can teach a lot of the first world countries a thing or two of how to run elections and the way things we do in this country. So keep it up. Listening to you guys, I really just feel very, very proud. So thank you, Chair. And by the way, I think the IEC is better than most of the banks. Then just some questions. I have concerns, and perhaps an advantage in that deal with the IEC in other ways, and I find that a lot of the people, and I do acknowledge a lot of them are not full-time staff members, a lot of these people come in during election times, but I do find that usually, in some cases, these people are not adequately trained. They lack the understanding of the legislation, and in many cases, it's the political parties, irrespective of who the parties are, who perhaps know the legislation a little bit better, that are advising, and that is a source of concern. I know not just with my party, but with other parties. And I don't know I don't have an answer for that. And perhaps the IEC have pondered about and come up with some solutions, because I acknowledge a lot of these staff members are not full-time people. These are people you've got from municipalities and so forth. So perhaps there's a way that we can sort of simplify or dumb down the legislation in such a way. Perhaps you could just talk to us about that. The next question is perhaps something a little controversial. And those of you could talk to us about elections abroad, South Africans that are registered, and elections taking place outside of our borders, and how do we accommodate those? Because at the moment, the way I understand it is they can only vote at an embassy or at a consulate, if I'm not mistaken. However, if you live 1,000 kilometres away from your nearest South African consulate, they may pose problems. Have you perhaps thought about things like that? We have South Africans, or a reasonable number of South Africans. How can the IEC get to be more accessible to them? Then you've got, in your presentation, you talk about quarterly reports that you submit. And perhaps this is a silly question, and that is, to whom do you submit these quarterly reports? I'm presuming it's to the Commission, but is there anybody else? If you could just talk to us about that. You also mentioned in your presentation a strategic risk register. If you could just explain what that is. I'm guessing, but I don't want to guess, what your risks are and how you're dealing with them. Then one of the other issues as well is that your voter's rolls, or our voter's roll, only indicates a name and an ID number. And it's something that political parties have been asking for, is other details like an address or a telephone number and so forth. Is there any possibility in the future these details would be added onto a voter's roll? And of course I'm being quite selfish perhaps, political, in that obviously political parties would use it to canvass voters and so forth. What are the possibilities of doing that? How easy would it be to do that? So I know it involves technical issues. Then you also talk about research projects. You could just talk to us what kind of research you're looking at. And I just want to congratulate the IEC. I think it's very important that we move on with new times with regard to social communication, social media. I think the IEC is lacking in that regard, and the world is a moving place technologically and socially, so that's important. You mentioned there was an increase in by-elections. You could tell us, is there a reason? Is there some kind of trend why this is the case? And then what I do want to ask is your relationship with other IEC bodies or equivalent bodies in other countries. Is there some kind of formal relationship with other countries? Is there some kind of organization, perhaps an umbrella body? You could tell us about that. And then I just quickly request that when you can, the detail on the last slide, that detail you are talking to. You're talking too fast for me to make too many notes. We could have that detail as soon as possible. Chief, thanks for your indulgence.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I identify with what my
colleague De Freitas had to say about the IEC. I think we're very grateful for it. I can't help but think, since I've been involved in elections since 1972, that there was an election under the old style in 1992, which was quite an important election for South Africa's history. But of course the election in 1994 was the most exciting, but what a mad scramble it was, working out in those rural areas and running out of ink and everything else. But since then we've certainly come a long way, and I think we're all very grateful for the good work the IEC does. I think the deputy chairman and the CEO, who I also wish to congratulate on his appointment, as well as our new commissioners who've arrived. It's good to have people like yourself serving our nation. It came in at the end, but there's no mention in the strategic goals anywhere, they sort of liaison internationally. In fact, I had it down as a question because I was looking through everything, and then the CEO and the deputy chairman beat me to it by mentioning some events. But I think it is an important element, and I don't want to sound silly, but you know, South Africans, I think, often think that we're sort of still a bit of a colony, and we can learn from other people. It's not true. We're actually tops. We can teach people a lot. And I and some of our colleagues here have just come back from Russia. And it was very interesting in the Duma and the Federal Council to sense the excitement that the Russians had at this last election, more particularly because it was really a lot of Russians very interested in the whole process and participation, and they had a much better turnout than they've ever had before. But the point I'm trying to make is that their transition has actually been a lot more difficult and a lot more bumps than ours has been. And I think we can help a lot there. And that brings me on to the BRICS thing. And of course, we have in BRICS four very strong, what the CEO calls, electoral democracies, and we have one very powerful nation which calls itself a democracy, but it's certainly not an electoral democracy. But I think the BRICS connections are very strong connections for us as South Africans, and a real opportunity for us to punch above our weight, because we're very small, really. In fact, we've got a bit of a cheek being in BRICS, because of the huge size of those other four countries and their economies and their populations. So I just wanted to mention that, but I think it should be this element of assisting in our region and in Africa, in fact internationally. I think it should be one of the strategic goals to, as it were, be a resource and cooperate.
Thank you, Honorable.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. One of the things I've picked up within the strategic plan itself and also the annual performance plan is that in terms of goal 2, organizational efficiency and effectiveness, we are talking compliance, value-adding oversight, but the outcome in terms of, because you're talking targets, my understanding is that we must come with the exact outcome out of those things. But what we are saying we're going to measure ourselves with is the reports that would come. And for me, that does not suffice. Because a report is documented, it's something that is within the documents, but one would want to have an impact of what we have done on the ground. We're doing this for the sake of the people that we live with. And all the other things that if we are saying we need to ensure compliance, how will the report then verify and make us feel that there is a change, there is that particular compliance? So those are the things that I would want us to check. The same happens with the internal audit issue, where you would then submit a report as a verification in terms of the improvement of the system. To me, I should expect an outcome that talks on improved controls, because now you have implemented an internal audit system that is viable, that is working. So you will therefore have a control system that is that has improved over time. Lastly, Chair, is around the issue of voter education. Mostly we're talking meetings and strategic projects. I don't know what is the strategic project, if they can be unpacked, because I may have my own thinking of what a strategic project is, yet you have something that you think the strategic project is. But, you know, one would want to have a feel of IEC on the ground. We understand, I know the first answer would be the issue of the resources. But we are saying, unless we put out these things out and let us know about these things, we cannot address the reality on the ground. We still have lots of people who doesn't understand the importance of voting, who does not understand the processes in terms of what you should do and what you are not allowed to do towards voting or within the voting stations and so on and so forth. But what one is saying is, how do we make sure that we get down on the ground and ensure that particular education on an ongoing basis, not only around election time, but that should be an ongoing process, so that at the end of the day you have the majority of our people understanding elections as to what is actually happening, why is it important for a person to vote, and what would be the effect of that to the society as a whole. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me acknowledge and appreciate this very important interaction with the new commission, as we recommended to the President. I think it's a very good team, and you're welcome. I think that's a very good thing to mention. So I always find it a bit difficult to work with this IEC. I think Honorable Defaiter said, and in aligning myself and qualifying his statement, in as much as there are problems many a times on the ground, we'll find that when you escalate it to get some form of joy, as you escalate it to the higher level. But I'd like to ask a question. To what extent does the IEC maybe you read my mind. When we are angry, we say IEC, ANC. But when we know it, we say IEC. So the Electoral Commission, as it stands, is sometimes facing challenges, especially in the far-flung rural areas, where you'll find that many a times senior citizens or people of high esteem in the community, the principal or the pastors, would be the presiding officers. And because there's no people, generally other people seem to look up to those others who can take that lead. And it becomes a catch-22 situation, because most of the time these people become activists in political parties, at times members of the executive committees in their respective parties. And now, how do you find that balance as defined in the Electoral Commission, which we recently amended, that we should not at any given time have a situation where members of the executive are part of the, especially are serving as presiding officers in those stations. So to what extent are we monitoring that? Because that is sometimes a challenge when it comes to election. I once reported a matter where I was involved in Khayelitsha, for instance, here in Cape Town, in a matter where I was told that, look, please come. The presiding officer is refusing to take objections, even giving forms as such, to where the presiding officer was drunk and refusing to take questions or objections from people who were at the time party agents. Now, at stage like, you know, in circumstances like those, you then want to wonder whether is there something that we could do to prevent that from happening, where because of the nature of their political allegiance, people tend to be arrogant and sometimes refuse to accept any other person except from the party that they tend to support. And at one station where the situation of ballot papers and ballot boxes were left in a school, nobody could take care of those documents, and we had to deal with that matter. I'm just saying those are things that might reoccur if we don't take cognizance of that, because those are practical issues on the ground. So we need to look at how best then can the IEC put checks and balances and measures in place to avoid that from reoccurring, because the system that we have is world class, but we need to deal with those nitty-gritties. In terms of the reports, the strategic goals that have been put forward, one of the important things is the work with the international stakeholders. I'd like to know, the IEC, what is the form of experience that you've gained in working with those international stakeholders, and perhaps what is it that you wish to learn more going forward? The second question with regard to what is here before us, is there any pending legal challenges in terms of the outcomes of any elections, either in the by-elections or the general elections? I know at some stage there was one issue in Midvan, which we have raised as the DA then in that particular election, and in KZN, where people were moved into an area by another party, which we felt that it was not the right thing to do, and the IEC had to deal with that matter. The last one, Chair, is that we see in the report all the time it's referring to 2013. The annual target, and I think that it should actually be 2012. That's my way of looking at it. I don't know what's the emphasis on 2013, because we are in 2011-12. So I would like to know why are we setting that target as the annual target 2013 instead of 2012-13 in the report. It's confusing. And also, Jay, on page 17, on the frequency of managing the portal role, you will see that it's three times per quarter, which is annually we have 12 times for this current financial year. Before, how often were you taking it, and what were the outputs of that? Were you able to achieve all of that?
Thank you very much, Honorable Hasibon.
Thanks, Chair. My first question is with regard to the updating of the voters role. Like, if I go to Home Affairs to report the death of a person, it automatically reports to SASSA in case a person was getting a grant or so. Now, what I want to find out from you is if your systems are also linked to those of Home Affairs. And if not, would you then at any stage consider linking your systems to make it easy for updating your voters' roles? And my second question is on the... I want to know the difference between the strategic objective 1.1 concerning promoting a knowledge of electoral democratic principles and 4.1 concerning educating public on democracy and electoral processes, and 4.3 concerning communicating electoral processes to the public, because to me they are a bit similar. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me first congratulate the new Commissioner, especially our former colleague, Commissioner Daliart, and the IEC and the new staff, the CEO and the new staff. And I hope that you are going to keep up with the good track record. Chair, my first concern was I thought the Deputy Chair is going to elaborate more when he spoke about the IEC going to explore electoral voting. I thought you are going to elaborate on that particular issue, because I'm also thinking about the rural areas, because some rural areas do not even have schools for electricity purposes, because if we talk about the electoral voting, there must be electricity in most of the areas as well. So if you could elaborate more on that particular issue. The second issue, Chair, that I need clarity on, I see members of parliament that are foreign nationals, and I always have this question in my mind, are they voters? Or at what stage do the foreign nationals vote? Because this thing always confused me, that I saw foreign nationals that are members of parliament. So I need clarity on that particular issue as well. Maybe it's for us legislators, not for you, I don't know, but you explain to us. And finally, Chair, you know, when from 94 and the following elections, when you go to a voting station on the voting day, it was, how can I put it, it was like a holy place. But today, if you go there, it is quite chaotic outside there, the voting station. And then IEC was strict on the so many kilometers that our political parties should be situated, their tables should be situated outside the voting kilometers, and it should be so many kilometers away from the voting station. I don't know, because outside it's very, very chaotic lately. Is that still applies? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I have an interesting one for you, and that is, let's say a decision, for argument's sake, we don't know what decision is going to be taken in that regard, but let's say a decision is taken and legislative amendments and so on, whatever is necessary, is is brought about that the elections should be held together, the national general election and the municipal elections. Is it logistically possible for the ISC, if you don't want to answer that question, but I mean to hold these elections together by 2014? If you don't want the answer, you don't have to. It's just an interesting one. Obviously, the political decisions still have to be taken. Over to you, Vice Chair. You can delegate questions wherever you want to answer.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. There are lots and lots of challenging questions. This is how I propose that we deal with some of the questions. I want to check firstly with the commissioners. Perhaps Commissioner Tazia can deal with the issue of international aspect, and then I'll deal with some of the issues after your response, and then both Sai and Mshutu can deal with all other difficult questions, as is the tradition.
Thank you, Deputy Chair, and also thank you for all the warm words of congratulation. It is an interesting position to be on this side of the table and not on that side of the table. It's still an adjustment in many ways, but one that I embrace happily, and I look forward to this time period that I'll be spending with the IEC. And also thank you to all of you who in the House put your confidence in all of us and voted for us. I'd like to deal with international relations question. If one looks at the history here, it has often happened in a more ad hoc form when then Foreign Affairs and now DIRCO would indicate that the IEC may be involved in a bilateral interaction in a different country. It's never really been done as formally through memoranda of understanding or very specific steps that were taken to formalize those relationships as actively as they are being pursued now. The new commissioner, I think the new commissioner, the deputy chair was present, if I recall, and the chairperson in a meeting with DIRCO, there was a new MOU that's been signed that will also formalize those relationships, because the demand for the IEC's involvement will grow, and I agree wholeheartedly with the confidence that you've all expressed in the fact that many other countries can learn from us. I think particularly if one observes the chaos that exists vis-a-vis the United States' electoral list, and I don't want to name and shame other countries who may want to learn from us, or indeed the memories of the Florida pregnant and hanging chads, there are many, many areas where there could be a very productive exchange between our commission and other electoral management bodies in countries that may believe that they have perfected the art of running elections. And perhaps, Deputy Chair, if I may be so bold, perhaps if we were to ever come to the committee to ask for more legal authority to be doing more of this kind of work, stronger legal authority, we may actually come to the committee in that regard. You may recall that the ASMAL committee also indicated that even though this is not an area in his review of Chapter 9 institutions, even though this is not an area which effectively falls in our legal mandate, the sheer nature of the demand curve has grown. So it may be something we may want to consider. And here I'm not speaking in a mandated form. I haven't consulted my other commissioners. I'm simply indicating that in terms of the recommendations of the Chapter 9 review of Carter ASMAL, one may even want to consider giving the IEC stronger formal legal authority to do more of this work. So if you get lobbied for such an activity in the future, don't be too surprised. I think that's probably in a nutshell, Deputy Chair. I don't know whether you want to be more specific on the MOU or any of the DIRCO interactions, but I would leave it with you.
Okay, thank you very much. I think Commissioner Tuller is actually correct. If you look at the way we've been presenting our budget, you will notice that we have not actually been indicating the kind of the resources that would be requiring for the purpose of doing the international work. So what normally happens is that we enter into a relationship with the Department of International Relations. And recently, as Commissioner Tazar indicated, we had a meeting with the Director General where basically they would indicate in the continent the kind of areas and countries where they think there may be some kind of requests. And based on that, money would then be allocated by the Department of International Relations to us in order for us to be able to perform those kind of responsibilities. So normally the budget that we utilize in our engagement internationally is the budget that is coming from International Relations Department. And we are grateful. We have not really complained about those kind of resources. In the past, we were using, I think, African Renaissance Fund for purpose of funding us for our engagement, particularly in the DRC and many other countries where we help. But also just to indicate that, and I think it falls in line with the issue that Honorable McIntosh raised, in terms of our relationship with BRICS, we are starting to have a strong relationship and connection with some of the countries there. Currently, there is a memorandum of understanding that we have signed with India, and we are hoping now that the next step would actually begin to identify the kind of programs and projects that we're going to be working with India on. One other country that we have signed an agreement or memorandum of understanding with, which is not necessarily within BRICS, it's Mexico. But because of the scale of their operations, we felt that it was going to be important for us to enter into that kind of relationship with a country such as Mexico. But I'm sure the Commission would be looking into other members such as Brazil and then see how we can also improve our relationships and enter into some kind of relationship with those. Mosotho and Sai will talk a little bit about the some of the issues that were raised by Honorable Defraitas. But I just wanted to indicate in relation to training of the staff, and it's an aspect that I would like them to talk a little bit on. We have identified this as one of the important risks that faces the organization from time to time, that the integrity of the organization and the quality of leadership is not only determined at a national level, it is largely determined by what happens at the local level, at the voting station level. We have identified that in terms of our discussions that we have already had on Vision 2018 to say what are the kind of mechanisms that we need to put in place in order to deal with those kind of challenges and problems. And then one of the issues that I personally have been trying to raise to say we need to have some kind of a semi-permanent presiding officers and deputy presiding officer structures, because once we've got those kind of structures together, it is easy for you to cascade training. You know exactly who are the people that we are dealing with all the time. So, you know, but it's an issue that is still being explored, and we'll see to what extent we can deal with it. We have also agreed to capacitate some of the people who have been operating at EPC levels to see as whether we cannot actually utilize those people as trainers, so that, you know, instead of only dealing with one aspect of maybe electricity, democracy, education, they begin to deal with much more operations of the organizers, such as training of the presiding officers and electoral staff at the local level. But I'm sure both Mosotho and Sai would be able to talk a little bit on that. In terms of the elections abroad, which is also one of the issues that honorable member raised, we currently utilizing embassies. There is a task team that is looking at elections abroad, and Mosotho and Sai again will comment on that. But the current arrangement is that we are only utilizing the South African embassies in all the countries where we've actually assisted. Strategic research, Mosotho and Sai will talk to that. I don't know whether I understood the question properly about the addresses on the voters' roll, whether that could actually be made available. That could be made available, and in fact, I think it is going to be made available once we've got addresses on the voters' roll. But I just want to caution members on this. It's an issue that we are discussing. We've got to remember that there are quite a number of people in our country who do not have addresses. People who live in the rural areas, people who live in the informal settlements. it is very, very difficult for those people to have the addresses. So while the addresses could actually be convenient for political parties, particularly in urban areas, we've got to think about the implications for those people who do not actually have addresses at all. But also, and I know I'm not mandated to talk about this, but I just thought I should use this as an opportunity to caution the political parties again. A tendency is emerging where we find that political parties, there are those that are using the issues of addresses to try to disqualify people from participating in the elections, and there are those who are also trying to use the issue of the addresses to try to change the voting patterns in the country. This is putting us in a very difficult position. I don't know how many objections and complaints we have received from the political parties in relation to those two issues. And I'm obviously not qualified to say to the political parties that they can raise whatever issues that they want to raise in relation to those issues. But we just have to be cautious about the impact of the kind of the complaints and objections that we are raising in relation to that, particularly in the light of what I have already indicated, that you've got quite a number of people who do not actually have the addresses in the country. You know, how do you deal with those kind of people? We will probably, you know, be engaging more on that particular aspect as we move on. The majority of the issues that were raised by Honourable Member Buffon, I think, will be dealt with by people in the administration. I think I'm going to try again. I know I always struggle, but I hope I'm getting it right. This is my second term. I must get it right. Honourable Ntasa. Two more sessions, I'll be fine. It is true indeed, the issue that you have raised in relation to the people at the voting station level, the kind of people that we have there, and how those people can also compromise the integrity of the organization, either because of their involvement in other things and then also using their status. It's a matter that we are looking into. But also, as a principle, what we've attempted to do over the years, and we still emphasize this, that in the areas where we are appointing presiding officers and deputy presiding officers, particularly, those names are given to the parties through party lines and committee structures. So if members can actually make sure that their members are active, especially at the local level, because those are the structures that are very, very important in terms of screening the kind of people that we appoint at that level. From Centurion, it is not going to be possible for us to know each and every person, you and your people who are based at the local level, are the only people who can be able to testify to the integrity or lack thereof of the people that we utilize at the level of the voting stations. So when we submit the names to the political parties, we expect feedback from the political parties to say, we are uncomfortable with the following person for the following reasons. And then if indeed there is there are substantial reasons that have been advanced, we will remove those kind of people. But you also recall that we indicated in the previous sessions that we also check the names of people that we are actually utilizing against the names of people who are actually candidates. And in the previous election, we noticed that quite a number of our officials were actually candidates for some of the political parties. And then at a local level. So we remove those people immediately. when we identify that kind of a problem. You know, so, but we're trying all the time to try to see what are the kind of the mechanisms we can put in place in order to try to rectify that situation. So it is a real risk that exists at the local level. In terms of international liaison, what are the kind of the things that we have learned? As I've indicated, that when we develop our strategic plan now, we looked at all the kind of experiences. There are many things that we learn. Sometimes we learn positive things. Sometimes we learn how not to do certain things because of the negativity that we actually see as we engage in the continent. And it is true that the majority of people out there appreciate the kind of work that the IEC does. In fact, I've just come back this weekend from a workshop with the countries that in Egypt, with the countries that have just overthrown their governments. Libya, Egypt, Tunisia, particularly in the north. So those were the three countries that were grappling with the issues of how to establish electoral commissions and also what are the kind of the challenges that they're expected to face, because they've never, you know, a country like Libya, for instance, has never had a democratic election for the past 50 years. You know, so it is quite a challenge. And in fact, Libya particularly, and I still have to give the report to the commissioners, as I think I only came back now, it's one of the countries that are saying to South Africa, they want to send a formal proposal for South Africa to come and assist them with the establishment of the electoral commission there, but also with the running of their elections. You know, so there's a lot of things that the majority of people learn from us, but we also learn all those things, and we try to see how we improve our systems in order to avoid the kind of the negativity that we identified in their processes, but also on how we also can improve our systems. Other issues that I'm leaving, it means they are very difficult. I'm leaving them to students. Honorable Nehasboni, you raised an issue around the voters' role. The three sessions that you see there, the three in the reports, in the report, it basically indicates the number of times that we take our data and check it against population register. So there is a connection between what we have and what Home Affairs has. So from time to time, as indicated in the strategic plan, we check that information against that, and then the information will indicate who is dead and who is not dead. You know, so that's how we're able to tell how many people are still on the voters' roll, how many people have deceased, et cetera, et cetera. Honorable Taban raised the issue of... Is it Taban?
White
Taban. The issue of electronic voting. As I've indicated, that issue is still being explored within the organization. But the issues that we are raising are very, very important issues and considerations. To say, if we're going to be introducing electronic voting, will the system that we'll introduce still be applicable even in the rural areas? We can't introduce one system that is only catering for urban areas and does not cater for other areas. Whatever system that we've got in the organization will have to be applied uniformly throughout the country. So we will see, once we've actually got the details on how this is actually going to be applicable, whether it is the kind of the system that can operate with or without electricity in all those different areas. You may recall that you know, we are still able to use what you call the ZipZip machine, even in the rural areas, even though it requires you know, to be charged. You know, so we will see how we deal with those kind of things. Whether the kind of the system that we introduce eventually, if we decide to go the electronic voting route, whether it is the kind of the system that can actually be utilized even in those rural areas. They will also deal with the tables at voting stations. There's the chapters and ask a question about harmonizing the elections, especially by 2014. We're still exploring that. We're looking into that. We're debating that within the organization. But it is a challenge. And then I'm just raising it as a, it's not a commission position. From my little understanding of what it would entail, it would be extremely difficult for 2014. But we will see once the committee that is driving this, I think is it Mr. Mamavolo who's driving that particular committee. Once they've actually been able to come up with clear ideas around that, we can then be able to speak with you, we can have a conversation with you with authority on the subject. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson of the session, and Commissioner Tilani. I'm very grateful, sir, that you dealt with the last question. That was the one that we would leave to you, absolutely. My colleagues and I will try to deal with the remainder of the questions, and indeed they are very tough. The issue relating to the adequacy of training, my colleagues and Mamavolo will deal with that, Honorable De Freitas. The issue relating to elections abroad, Commissioner Zelani has dealt with a little bit, but my colleague will just broadly indicate the work we are doing with respect to legislative amendments and the challenges that will come with the work. Some of it obviously needs Parliament to pronounce itself on, but my colleague Mamavolo will deal with them. There was a question regarding quarterly reports. To whom are they being submitted other than the members of the Commission? And I think it's important that we indicate that we have to submit this report to Treasury amongst others. But we have indicated that we have an internal audit committee that also looks at this, and also the quarterly risk review process that we submit this to. And I wanted to venture to say that if this if the question is being raised with respect to other areas where this may be necessary, I'm sure the Commission will be keen to listen and consider those requests. With regard to what the strategic risk register entails, Commissioner Tilan, I want to spread the net wider. I have the acting risk chief risk officer, and he will deal with that aspect on our behalf. The issue with the voters' roll with addresses, Commissioner Tilani has dealt with, and I did want to indicate, though, that even with what Commissioner Tilani has indicated, the Commission has never held back on either the challenges it has with respect to the addresses or held back those addresses that we currently have. And in that respect, Section 16(3) of the Electoral Act is directs us very clearly to say that where those addresses exist and any political party would like a voter's roll with those addresses, there is a certain amount that is payable and we provide the voter's roll with addresses. And members will be pleased to know that parties do make use of that facility, and we have never held back when parties exercise their right in terms of that section. You also asked the reason for increased by-elections, and I think these are interesting. In the past, death was the leading cause of by-elections. Out of every five, three were more or less death, 60%, in other words. But in recent days, deaths and expulsions compete. They take alternate positions depending on the month in which we have by-elections. We have still seen a lot of expulsions, you know, taking place. Resignations too, you find that in some periods are fairly high. I must say to you, sir, that when one looks at deaths, and my colleague Sarma Mavolo will also talk in general about some of the issues relating to the voters' roll that you have asked, you will find that deaths on the voters' roll have stabilized. They, in fact, we, you know, there was a time when we said to this committee that deaths were very high. On a month-to-month basis, we're looking at anything between 35 and 45,000. In 2008, 2009, we have seen a stabilizing effect on the voters' roll. They are currently between 32 and 45, and 35. But my colleague will touch on that. So perhaps the fact that deaths are competing with expulsions and other things, it's also because we, you know, the Minister of Health has spoken about, you know, this country stabilizing and so on and so forth. And I think we just see a small part of that on the voters' roll, and I think it's important to say that. And the research areas that we are looking at in this period, you will be pleased, ma'am, that you know one of the things that we are finalizing, it's a report on a study we have undertaken on electronic voting and what, you know, we can learn from that in terms of our current day-to-day challenges. It's one of the research work that we will be finalizing in this period. But we are also undertaking work with respect to key challenges that exist with respect to the work we do in the view of the ordinary citizen of this country. We try to do that kind of work before we even begin in earnest with a registration or election activity, so that we are able to respond directly to what our voters are telling us they are challenged in. With respect to the performance targets, and I think, ma'am, you were saying that there are some challenges and you want us to clarify. I may have missed some of the things, but I do want to submit to you, ma'am, that the financial year 2011-2012, which ended on the 31st of March 2012, is going to be our first one as a nation and us as the Electoral Commission, where this plan that we propose to you with its targets and things is going to be audited. We have genuinely struggled, I guess, alongside everybody in developing those performance indicators and worked extensively, I must say, with Treasury. Before we even submit that plan to yourselves, we submit it to Treasury, who go through and say, this is not smart, it's not verifiable, it's not auditable. And I don't want to defend anything. I want to just say to you that we are going to go through the first audit, performance audit, this year, and we will respond, we will tell you the kind of changes that will come out of such a process. Because it might be that in the area that you're raising concerns, perhaps there are no concerns, but it might be that we have fundamental issues that we need to change in the eyes of the Auditor General and not that of Treasury. By the way, Treasury and the Auditor General on this issue, between themselves also, they have a number of challenges, and we sit in the middle. So we will take note of the concern that you have raised, but I assure you we will report on that. It'll even be in our financials this year, and we, you know, touch wood that we don't have a number of major challenges. With respect to what extent the Electoral Commission seeks to ensure that our presiding officers are not tainted, I think Commissioner Delaney has dealt with that matter. But I also want to say to you that you would remember, members, that we did come to you. We have worked extensively and closely with political parties in the main to deal with the issue of having persons that work in voting stations being people that are credible. We've even gone to the extent that when we recruit them, we have developed criteria that we had agreed in advance with political parties. Not an easy process at all, but we agreed all together what the criteria would be. And when we recruited particularly presiding officers and their deputies, we requested their curriculum vitae, and we get those details. We call PLC meetings at local level, and we submit those details and set aside a period where anyone can object to a person being a presiding officer on the ground of them being partisan or, you know, not being impartial. I must tell you, we deal with those when they are raised. We deal with them. We remove those people. In the instances where we then find later, there are often instances where no objection was received, and later parties really come to us in a very humorous way. They say, well, we are grateful that you have removed so-and-so because they have shown political bias. We accept that they are our member. And, you know, at the time, we didn't think it's a big problem. And we are asking parties to really and truly help us. Of course, it's not their main responsibility. It is ours. But I wanted to say that we do have a process that we have put into place. And in addition to that process, we will gladly, as Commissioner Tulani has indicated, and as you know, we will gladly remove anyone who, at the time of them undertaking the work that they do, are not doing, or they are not as impartial as we thought they would be. We do it summarily. We don't even have an inquiry. We'll rather go to the CCMA later when the electoral process is over. The experience that we have gained, Commissioner Dulan has spoken about it, but I want to say that, you know, in South Africa we are very fortunate that every election is never the same as the other one. If today we ran an election in the same way that the 1994 election was run, all of us will say not free, not fair, not credible. So in that respect, I want to assure you that the benefits of the work we do internationally, and when people visit us, and you know, we also learn when they come here, but we also learn when we go there. One of the things that we have learned, it's, and those of you that have had voting stations that are highly populated, Jubert Park, my colleague Mamabolo would know, there's nothing we can do to break that station further. It has about 12,000 people. It's just a very small piece of ground with high-rise buildings and 12,000 people there. So there's very little we can do. But what we have done as part of our lessons learned, and I want to say to you, in this instance, Congo, where we were very key in assisting them to run the elections, we have learned that we can break those large voting stations into smaller chunks that we call streams. And we have done this very successfully for the last election. It's just one of the many things that we have learned to do. But we also teach others, and we have learned from others, from the mistakes that others commit, that we have to be more transparent in the work that we do, because transparency is a key issue in elections. People have one view when they vote, and when the results are announced, they have a different view. We seek to keep it transparent from beginning to end. And I think these are some of the key lessons that we have learned. Are there any outstanding court challenges relating to our elections? There are one or two. They are not outstanding on our part. They are outstanding on account of issues that are in the courts. There is an issue. It's not necessarily generally just an election thing, but it is. It touches the issue of the electoral system as we have it at the moment. It's in the constitutional. It was in the High Court. It's probably going to be referred to the Constitutional Court. It was in South Gauteng South. It relates to whether it's Emperor Thembu. It relates to whether, in fact, he's alleging that the electoral system is fraught. He cannot stand as an independent candidate for the National Assembly, which is true. We, you know, our system requires that you know, you stand on a party list, and he's saying no. He, you know, he wants to stand, but he goes further, I must say, to say that there's a whole piece of earth in South Africa that is his, and therefore it touches on the issue of representation as we use it at the moment in terms of the provinces, provincial legislatures, and so on and so forth. We don't have the responses I've indicated. This matter has been in court for a long time. I think that's the one. The others, courts have pronounced themselves. There are certain things that have had implications on the work that we do. My colleague will talk about the legislative work that we are doing. Some of it, or a majority of it, comes out of court decisions that have been made. What are the annual checks? I mean, the checks that we had on page 17, I think it was asked. We looked at them, but that's what Commissioner Tulani also spoke about with the voters' roll. There are two others that I have missed, and maybe my colleague would help me. Yeah, and Stephen. If we have not answered, ma'am, let's deal with them. I think it's Mehasubun. The issue of our voters' roll linked to DHA, Department of Home Affairs, we don't have automatic notification as it happens with SASSA. But I think it's for also for a good reason. We have access, and we are gracious to the Department of Home Affairs. We are the only exception, as far as we understand, the Electoral Commission, to have that kind of access. We still go through their system, and they manage us through their system. But we can verify the status on the population register any time of the day, and we do so very regularly. Sometimes, and I wanted to also deal with a question that was raised with respect to persons other than South Africans being represented. In our instance, when we submit lists of candidates, we check that, those details. And it has not come to our attention that at the time, and I must make draw a very important distinction here, that at the time that we assign seats for provincial legislatures and the National Assembly, we can put our heads on the block and say only South Africans at that point. But do remember that Parliament, through I think it's the Office of the Speaker, manages the lists for Parliament, for the National Assembly and provincial legislatures. We don't know what happens when that. It's not our an area of competency for us. We do that for municipalities, and I can assure you, we check that their identity documents that they use at least are not fraudulent and they're South African. That we do. And if there are specific instances where we haven't, we will gladly look at it ourselves. Then there were issues of electronic voting that Commissioner Tulani has dealt with. Thank you, sir. Foreign nationals, we've just dealt with it. The issue of tables and tents outside of voting stations, I'd like my colleague to also, he dealt with a lot of it in the province. He's one of the provinces that has a major issue with this, but challenges. But I must indicate that, you know, this is a matter that we have consulted extensively with political parties. Every election, before every election, we even sit in the PLC and take and note that decision. Parties have said to us that an election must never feel like a funeral. It must have activity. It must have some activity that indicates that there's serious work that is being done. And I will not say by we have voted and this is the parties have acknowledged that, you know, there are challenges that we need to deal with, but we cannot have a ban completely. We have put that on the table. And they have said, no, it cannot be that. Because one of the things that they do, and I accept that, and I acknowledge that it's important, one of the things they do, which is positive from those tables and tents, is that they are able to tell when voter turnout is low, and to assist in that regard, voters that may have challenges come to the voting station on the day. That I accept. But it also has challenges because sometimes other things that are negative can happen where voters can be, you know, told you're not on the roll when they in fact are not supposed to be doing that. And we raise these issues constantly with political parties. I have no doubt that we'll do the same going to 2014. And the commission will take a view on those issues. Will we share your experiences there also on the issue? The question that Commissioner Tulani dealt with on single election side, I'm grateful. Stephen Langstrom will deal with the strategic risk. Mama Wolo deals with everything else that we all have.
Thank you,
Theo.
Just in terms of the strategic risk register, honourable members will know that the PFMA requires the accounting officer to put in place systems to ensure effective financial risk management. So it's not a new area, but it's an area of increasing focus from Treasury and the Auditor General. So we've decided to begin to formalise some of the processes in that regard. And the Commission recently adopted a risk management policy. And in terms of that policy, we've maintained risk registers. There's a strategic risk register at national level, and then each department also has, in the IC also has operational risk registers. So what the strategic risk register does is it identifies key risks which we think might prevent us from achieving our objectives. And in addition to that, it also identifies what we will do to mitigate those risks to ensure that if they do arise, we're able to have a plan in place to deal with them. An example would be, the CEO alluded, for example, to the fact that we strive for 97% uptime in our systems. So interruptions not in business systems would be a risk that would typically rest on the risk register. These are just key ones, 7 or 8 that we've listed. So they're not all the risks that we might encounter in the organization. And we review the register quarterly at the Risk Management Committee and also at the Audit Committee. So we ensure that all the risks that are listed there are still current, that we're doing what we said we will do to ensure that to mitigate the occurrence of those. So that's basically what we do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to accentuate the response from both the Vice Chairperson of the Commission and the CEO relating to the training of staff and their performance. I think our point of departure is that the voting station is the prism through which the public views the Electoral Commission. Therefore, our performance or the performance of our presiding officers within voting stations remain an important and strategic matter for the delivery of our legal mandate. So it is quite crucial. To that end, we are currently doing an extensive assessment, performance assessment of all presiding officers, so that those that have underperformed are taken out of the system. So that's the one thing. Secondly, we are also moving towards what we call modular training, so that you don't train 2-3 months before an election, but you have continuous training of your presiding officers on the basis of a semi-permanent appointment that Commissioner Zelan was talking about. Because once you train a month or two before an election, you are in fact pushing numbers, and the qualitative considerations are not as high as they have to measures that the CEO spoke about will continue, where the recruitment criteria is shared with political parties, the proposed list of presiding officers are vetted, and so on. So that will happen. The other issue that I was requested to respond is the legislative amendments. Our assessment of what is going to be coming out of that process is that it's not going to be technical amendments, but rather amendments that would affect national policy, insofar as the following matters may arise. The number of ballots that are available for people outside of the country, whether people get both ballots or not, in relation to national and provincial elections. Currently, the practice is that they tender the national ballot and not the provincial one. Whether we can register people outside of the country is another consideration. That we need to balance, of course, with the fact that if you are in the country and you are outside of your province, you may only cast a national ballot. So when those matters are dealt with, I think a broader purview of those matters would have to be taken, rather than just the one consideration. So in terms of process, we are internally drafting discussion documents for the consideration of the Commission, and at the appropriate moment, the Minister of Home Affairs will be given the draft bill, which will then be taken through the parliamentary process and this committee. We will, as a matter of course, obviously consult political parties through the party liaison committee. In an effort to deal with the activities that are permissible outside of the voting stations, the Commission drafted and promulgated regulations dealing with that matter. And amongst the primary objectives is to avert instances where representatives of political parties inhibit the free flow of people, the free and direct access of voters to entrances of voting stations, because in some cases you find people really dragging voters by hand, say, "No, come to my table," and you know, some voters like it, others don't. You know, but you know, and this phenomenon of troubles outside the voting stations, you know, in the morning it's fine, very fine, but I suspect when people get an indication of what the turnout is, their attitude towards one another changes. So we've learned to live with that, we've learned to manage it, but I think the CEO is right. People don't want to have a solemn atmosphere. They want to celebrate our nationhood, our democratic nature as a country, as a society, and the elections represent a moment where we make that celebration.
Thank you very much. I will allow follow-ups if members are not satisfied with the, not new questions, but follow-ups if you're not satisfied with the answers. Anyone with a follow-up? Honorable Mkhansela and then Honorable De Freitas.
Yes, Chair, thank you for the very extensive response, rather, on the part of the IEC. The question which I've asked relating to presiding officers, you will find it strange, but the reality is that on the ground, the IEC, especially the metro electoral officers, or rather the local officers, electoral officers who are managing districts or the local districts, they would come and say when they wanting to legitimize a process where party A feels that they may have been sidelined in consultation, for instance. They would say, no, you know, we didn't know that you existed in this area. You know, I was set aback when one official said that to me, that no, we didn't know that you exist there, because you guys don't normally operate in the rural. So you wonder, if that kind of admission is coming on the side of IEC, what are you getting in return? There's no recourse. So it would be a very good thing to ensure that not only do we assume who exists where, but also we ensure that we engage and consult as broadly as possible across the board, so that it then becomes the choice of a party not to participate. For instance, in areas you'll find, Chair, that you go to a particular area and you don't have party agents, then I call an honorable member of party A or B and say, please look after my interests, I'll look after yours. So we do that kind of an exchange in terms of banking our interests. But it should not come from the side of IEC and say, no, we don't know that you exist there. Because our view is that we are national representatives, so we exist in every corner. The last one is I'd like to know the view of the IEC in pursuit of this mandate of ensuring that everybody can participate in a democratic election, especially those who are outside the country as well. The emphasis on a research around electronic voting. Do you think, because we've always asked this question, whether or not you think that it will be a worthwhile exercise? If so, to what extent do you think you can pursue this, and perhaps when can it be possible to implement, if at all it's something that you look into in the future? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Just two quick questions follow up, and that is the task teams that Mr. Mawal is involved in, I presume, will be then reported back to the PLCs on what the result is. And then the other one, with the thanks for the detailed information with regards voting abroad, are there time frames that you have? You may not have it, but are there time frames, and if so, what are they, where you would eventually present proposals to the minister and so forth?
To you, Vice Chair.
Okay, let me deal with the electronic voting again. I know I've not consulted with my colleagues, but I think we can make a firm commitment that at the next appearance, we will give the report either way, because the committee has actually been working on some kind of research on electronic voting. So it should be possible for us to be able to make a presentation to the committee on what is coming out of that exploratory document. I think Mr. Tui can deal with the other question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Commissioner Dlani, I wanted to qualify. I agree with you at the next appearance, as long as the appearance is not tomorrow or next week. But we'll provide it. On a more serious note, I think we have a lot of stories to tell. You know, elections, one day when we have publications that we write, we're going to write serious but humorous publications, because you will imagine on election day, very good things, very humorous things, and very tough things happen. We just need to really find time. Even as we debrief, you know, some stories that we hear are very interesting, but we do take into, you know, what I heard today, I agree with you, should not be something that our office should be saying, we didn't think you exist. But internally, one of the ways that we ensure, and I I've just made note of this. It shouldn't really be coming from us. We have parties that are registered nationally and parties that are registered municipally. And that is the thing that must drive our local offices, and we'll emphasize that. It's new to me, but I, these things can happen when you have a country, the size of our country, and the staff that we employ. The issue of electronic voting, I agree with Commissioner Tulani, but my colleague, Sai, in their unit, one of the things that we want to do with political parties is not only share with them the presentation, the findings of the report on electronic voting. There are some interesting things that are happening in that space, but some things that are very tough that we need to talk about, and we need to begin to to raise awareness of. And we were hoping that we will find a way to have some serious discussion, whether it's a conference or something, on that aspect. But it's a matter that we are working on, and clearly the commission will raise the issue. There was an issue that you needed to share the timelines and things, so I'll leave that to you.
The need to finalize the legislative amendments rather expeditiously has been noted on our part, and to that extent, we think we want to have a draft bill ready for submission to the minister around August this year. Chairperson, if you allow me, I think members of the committee would like to hear one of my experiences as a person who's been on the ground for a long time. On nomination day for the municipal elections, I got a call from one of our local offices, member Mtasela, and the question on that end was, can we take a ship as a deposit for participation because a certain party, which I'm not at liberty to mention, had not raised the necessary bank guarantee check.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We'd like to thank the ANC. Same trip. The IED. It's very close, you know. I think I'd also like to add to the other members by saying that we've always been, as a committee and as Parliament, we've been very proud of the work of the IEC, and proud of the fact that you haven't been involved in all kinds of controversies and so on, and we'd like to ask you to keep it that way, please. But thank you very much. We really appreciate your contribution. We'll stay in close contact. We also appreciate it if you could perhaps, in terms of your involvement in elections abroad, maybe make available to us that information. I think in the past there has been a custom that from time to time this committee would also send observers and so on. It hasn't really happened in the past few years, but maybe we should look into that again. So we'd appreciate that as well. Thank you very much. I think that brings us to the end of the meeting, and the meeting is adjourned. May I just ask the ANC, this time it is the ANC study group, to stay behind, please. Yes, Honourable De Freitas.
I'm sorry, just a question.
This is housekeeping. I see that we've had presentations from the entities. Are we not getting a presentation from the department itself at some time? We got, or did I miss it? I'm sorry.
On the 13th of March, we had a presentation from the department, so we've covered everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Another box.
Thank you.
how did they run the elections if they do not have the little money and then they...
This one should have been removed.
This one?
This one.
So I must also ask them.
Give me the today's one. And then Gam was there, he didn't find it. Gam. Okay, that's the right point. Maunye apology. Matere, I'll just say, then this one, apology. Tibeti, I'll just leave it as it is. This one, apology. Then you can submit it. You can submit it.
I'm saying
you're doing the report. Yeah, what I have to do, this guy, you know, the PNG guy, he has this thing. And now, he will have problems. Because he might have to put this in them. Run away. No? Yeah, the police last night. But the thing is, man, I want it when it's
late. I
don't know. You know this guy's not. They even used to clean it. Yeah, that one is. They used to clean it. So what happens when you buy it and then you clean it and you feed it back there? and not another point.
Yeah, you
want to analyze about it? Because how do you analyze appointing the electoral commission? I put some of the information, but no, when I was going through it, it's like now, even here. But even here, these things that I put here, I just put them because they're not part of this financial. I just put them because we did them last year. Instead of I just put them there. Then the other thing that I wanted, I don't know. You know, when the budget vote next week, I've done the home affairs part. I want to do the entity yesterday and today. And I might have to leave this place. But I want to. No, I send it, no, the home affairs part, I send it to the research. To kind of go through it and then it checked me. So yesterday we met two entities. Now I'm coming with the IEC. So I want to improve them so that I can finish this thing by today.
Okay, so you want to work less
in
transport?
Transport, yeah.
We're
going to extract
a
couple of
form and
then
I'll
sign it.
Yeah, get a couple
of promises.
Even if it's just a memo, something to do.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
when do you need this one? That's why I was looking for you in the morning. No, you know, no, for me sometimes I think it's much better if there's something then we can talk and then, you know.
Thank you.
PMG, they will say, no,
he's
I'm not sure it was stopped.
Yeah, I'll just record
you
it
can
now.
Delete whatever is not...